Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, October 27th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delpa.
The Oregonian changes horses in midstream.
The Striker Brigade strikes out for some American-style R&R.
And 9 miles of the Willamette River puts Portland off the Superfund charts. We've really knocked it out of the park with this one.
Portland area weather today, showers, thunderstorms, maybe some hail, highs around 53. Tonight, patchy fog, mostly cloudy, low around 42. And tomorrow, morning fog, cloudy with a high near 51.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. The Oregonian, our state's newspaper of record, has a new publisher. Like so many Oregonians, he's from California. But, hey, he was actually born in Oregon, and it gets better. Christian Anderson III hails from, wait for it, Orange County. Yes, he was the publisher and the CEO of the Orange County Register for many years before coming to Oregon. Anderson did grow up in Hetna, delivering the Oregonian. Enough copies at one point to win a trip to Disneyland. Congrats, Christian. You're already there.
Across the Columbia, the Vancouver mayoral contest is turning into a war of the wallets. Whatever else it is, this race has drawn more money than any other in the coup's history. Incumbent Royce Pollard and challenger Tim Leavitt have collectively raised a staggering six-figure sum. Donations are coming from businesses that expect to cash in on Columbia Crossing and assorted pro-growth deep pockets. Oregonians are writing fat checks, too. So far, more than $3,400 to the Pollard campaign and a little over $2,000 for Leavitt. It's enlightening to look at the sources of the larger contributions.
This isn't really a mayoral election concerning Vancouver. This is all about a bridge. They should just have the mayor of the bridge. The Portland Harbor Superfund site is the worst cesspool in the nation, a grim testament to blind greed and arrogant disregard for future generations. The most recent report due to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency this week finds that decades of industrial pollution have left high levels of contaminants in river sediment. Essentially, the 9 mile stretch of river is deadly to all living things. The story goes that this survey is a big step in the cleanup process because it provides the EPA with the numbers needed to plan the most expensive restoration project in Oregon's history. That process could begin in 2013 after yet another study of cleanup alternatives. Meanwhile, we continue to pollute the river, and we continue to study our mistakes.
Sometimes you have to get out in the woods to see the trees. So it is that on November 5th, the Oregon Board of Forestry will tour timberland near Garibaldi to get a first-hand look at a forest managed for sustainability by the Portland-based nonprofit EcoTrust. The EcoTrust idea is that forests can be managed, the environment can be protected, and more timber can be harvested. First off, a managed forest is a farm. Secondly, since people are the biggest threat to forests, the best way to protect the environment is to keep people out. And in the end, the whole process is designed to keep timber profits rolling in until the last of the ancient trees is pulp and stockbrokers are trading breathing futures on Wall Street. The next day, the board will hold its regular meeting at the Department of Forestry District Office in Tillamook.
You could actually be there if you want. It's all there on their website. The Green Point was in Kuwait on September 8th. Green Point, of course, is an enormous troop-carrying ship. It's now heading into the coastal waters where it's approaching American shores. I believe it's back in Tacoma at this point, and my guest, Drew Hendricks, joins us to talk about it. Good morning, Drew. Are you there?
I'm here.
Thanks for being with us today. Can you talk a little bit about the Striker Brigade and the return of the Green Point to Tacoma?
Yes, the Green Point is a commercial car carrier which brought back the 1-25th Striker Brigade combat team equipment, not the troops, just the Striker combat vehicle. It landed at the Port of Tacoma on Saturday and left on Sunday. It left about 280 vehicles on the parking lot at the East Blair 1 terminal in Tacoma, and right now as we're speaking, single strikers on flatbed trailers are traveling by commercial truck southbound on I-5 back to Fort Lewis. They're doing this so that they can be reset, that is to say refurbished, repaired, and returned at warehouses on the North Fort at Fort Lewis. This is a normal maintenance contract from General Dynamics Land Systems worth about $48 million, according to our sources in the Army.
So contractors are still making making a killing off of this war, so-called war in Iraq, which itself is not going so well at this point. What about these troops?
Well, so far, Washington State and Fort Lewis in particular has three striker brigades, two of which are right now deployed in Iraq, one of which is deployed in Afghanistan. And the unit in Afghanistan has been in the newspapers here often lately, losing a lot of soldiers in roadside bombs and getting a lot of injuries as well. We don't have, I don't have in my fingertips specific numbers. We do have a lot of Iraq veterans against the war who organized here, organized a coffee shop down in Tulakum called Coffee Strong. And those gentlemen tell me that they are opposed to the war and tell me that they're opposed to the refurbishment of these strikers in Cascadia. Unfortunately, right now, there isn't a lot of energy being spent toward actually resisting this current movement. The Tacoma PMR organizers are thinking of building more capacity for challenging this equipment when it moves out in April and May of next year, 2010, when they're supposed to be finished resetting them.
Thank you so much for that, Drew, and we'll check in with you again a little later to see how it goes with actions against these deployments and, of course, the associated deadly equipment. Thanks very much. My guest
Thank
has been anti-war activist Drew Hendricks. Thank you very much.
Last year, the school district and the Portland Association of Teachers spent several months developing changes in the way teachers are hired, assigned, and transferred. Apparently, it took. A recent report has it that changes in teacher hiring and transfers have improved the Portland School District's ability to get teachers into positions they want and give principals more say in hiring teachers. Last school year, only 11% of teachers who applied for openings internally went through interviews to get their jobs. Most were assigned to a job by a district office staff. This year, more than 60% of teachers were able to interview for their jobs.
Cascadia won't be seceding from the U.S. anytime soon, but lawmakers from many Western states have agreed that they should consider collaborating on developing technology to capture and store the carbon gas that's generated from burning fossil fuels. Yesterday and today, Wyoming is hosting a symposium on energy and the environment, and if that doesn't scare you, there's more. Many lawmakers from energy-exporting states have voiced alarm at the prospect of legislation pending in Congress that would set limits on greenhouse gas emissions from coal-fired power plants. Congress is considering a cap-and-trade system that would require companies to buy permits that would allow them to continue to pollute. Essentially, it's the old shell game. The translation, energy states want the status quo to remain, well, the status quo, and the environment be damned.
In Eugene, the city's police auditor, Mark Gisner, says the police review board is concerned. Eugene police tasered a Chinese student recently. Now Gisner is worried that if members of the citizens' review group get the review they want, the student might be unduly embarrassed. Very white of you, Mr. Gisner.
It's so embarrassing being tasered, isn't it?
Mm.
I know. It just throws me right off balance. In D.C. yesterday, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid announced that a public option will be included in the health care bill that the chamber will soon debate. Democrats and progressives broke into cheers at the news. Obviously, in this worst-case scenario world, a government-run option to private insurance is critical. But if anyone really believed it, then a single-payer system would be the only game in town. This is especially true considering Reid's plan will allow states to opt out of the federal program, and about 90% of all people seeking coverage would not be allowed to enter the insurance exchange. Independent journalist David Rosenfeld with LandReport.org joins us this morning to look at some of these questions. Good morning, David.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much. Can we talk a little bit about the people who are actually left out?
Right. I think this is the most untold story, especially from yesterday, since Harry Reid's announcement made so much news. And that was big news that he was including the public option. He had a compromise, which was the state opt-out, which I don't think many, you know, that's okay. It's going to force states to come out and say they don't want to offer this to their people. But I think what's really being missed here, and that Senator Wyden has been outspoken on and continues to be, is that this bill and all of the bills, every single one of them, excludes the public option for 90% of the people. And they do that by just saying that only individuals or those in small employer groups would be able to buy into the insurance exchange, which would give you a choice of health plans. And within that exchange, the public option would reside. So even under the most liberal bill in the House, the Congressional Budget Office predicted that by 2019, 30 million Americans would be covered through the exchange. A portion of those would receive the public option, and that's compared with 164 million people that would still be covered by their employers without any choice of their health plan. So for those 164 million people, virtually nothing will change about their health insurance coverage for the next 10 years.
And then, of course, there's the opt-out. Some states may choose not to participate, which, again, it defeats the whole idea that if you pool large numbers of people, you bring costs down.
That's right. I mean, we've seen states with conservatives in power that have turned down stimulus funds and unemployment payments and food stamp money for their people. So it's not going to be a surprise when many of these states choose not to offer a public option to them as well. But, you know, I just think this story is so crucial, and that also what a lot of people have said, a lot of single-payer people have pointed out, is that if you set up the public option this way, you're basically setting it up for failure. Because what you're going to get is you're going to get the sickest people, you're going to get all the individuals, and a lot of people that would be rejected otherwise into this plan, and it's going to be set up for failure. So I think that pushing for this being open to everybody is really what most Americans envisioned when they were asked whether they would support the public option. Like Senator Reid said yesterday, the majority of Americans say they want it, but still the majority of people are not going to be offered it. So I think there's a huge disconnect, and especially with Democrats and President Obama consistently saying that they're trying to expand choice, as if they can just keep saying it and not really doing it. Like no one's reading these bills or looking at the analysis that's being put out. So, it's a question whether they're going to be held to task on that.
Exactly. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been independent journalist David Rosenfeld with the Lund Report. Thanks again, David.
Thank you.
Attorneys for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce have issued a takedown notice trying to silence a parody website that was posted supporting the Yes Men's prank poking fun at the Chamber's stance on climate change legislation. The effort to take down the website, currently located at www.chamber-of-commerce.us, comes on the heels of a Yes Men prank that made international news this week. The group put out a press release and held a spoof news conference yesterday. They claimed the Chamber of Commerce had reversed its position and would stop lobbying against the climate bill. Several news outlets reported the story before determining it was a prank. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, October 27, 2009. Engineering is Janet Anderson. Kathleen Stevenson is KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delta.
You're listening to all-natural, free-range, non-syndicated KBOO radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.fm on the web. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members, and welcome new members. And don't forget, we didn't quite make our goal, so now is the time to become a KBOO member.
Coming up next, Flashpoint. Reports on Iraq and Afghanistan, police violence against Palestinian youth in East Jerusalem, and anatomy of a financial coup d'etat with Catherine Austin Fitz.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.